Agnir mahi ganam ambu marus dishascha kalasta tatma manisiti jagatriyani yasmad bhavanti vivavanti vishanti yamcha govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Translation: the three worlds are composed of nine elements, namely fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of universal cataclysm. So this verse explains how the Govinda is the basis of everything. Purport. There is nothing in the three worlds save the five elements. 10 quarters, time, jiva, soul, and the mental principle allied with a subtle body consisting of mind, intelligence, and ego of conditioned souls. So in other words, there's nothing more in this material world beyond these things. Well, 10 quarters means the 10 directions of space. 10 directions. Northeast, south, southeast, northeast, southwest, northwest. That's 8. Then up is 9. Down is 10. So there's 10 directions. And then mind, intelligence, like that. The elevationists, the karmis, they make their offerings and sacrifice into the fire. In other words, karmis that do jagya or homas, fire yagyas in their house, they offer oblations into the fire. Conditioned souls know nothing beyond this perceptible world of nine elements. The jiva is the self-same soul whose ecstatic delight the joyous liberationist gyanis aspire after. In other words, the jiva is made of ananda, satchidananda, and the gyanis and yogis seeking that type of liberation, they want to experience that brahmananda of realizing the ananda of the soul. Both the principles that are respectfully depicted as atma and prakriti by the system of sankhya are included in the above. In other words, all the principles that have been enunciated by the speculative philosophers, tattvavadis, are included in these nine elements. Sri Govinda is the source of the appearance, continuance, and subsidence of all these principles. In other words, creation, maintenance, and destruction of all the elements. So if you look at this verse, that's everything. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says in his purport, this verse describes atma and prakriti. Prakriti means the material elements that make up this world, and atma means the personality that's moving in those elements. The soul. There's a soul and matter. Matter and spirit. That's all there is in this world. Matter, spirit, and super spirit. Or matter, soul, and over soul. Or matter, soul, and super soul. Or prakriti, atma, and paramatma. Jiva Goswami's comments on this verse are like this. The meaning of this verse is clear. That's it. There's no more comment. And then one other comment is there. It says that when we attended classes years ago on this Brahma Samhita, the comment in this verse was, the soul is responsible for the material world and the material elements, but he's not part of it. So we may feel that we're very much a part of the material world, and we may be very much in the material world and controlled by the material world, which is most closely represented by the body which encases us and the material elements which surround and envelop and imprison all of us. Us meaning the Atma. So we may feel, although it's said that because of us the material world is here, and because of our desire we have material bodies, but we're not really part of it. But that's all, to realize that is part of self-realization. In the Bible, Lord Jesus said the same point. Be in the world, but not of the world. So, be in the body, but don't be the body. be in the body. Oh, I'm in a woman's body. I'm a woman. I'm in a man's body. I am a man. No, that means you're in the world and of the world. But to be in the world and not of the world means to be in the body, but be beyond the conception that I am the body. Exist on the platform of Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. I am the spirit soul. I am the conscious, blissful spiritual entity that's somehow bound, at least for a short time, in this limited body which is made of ignorance and various other unmentionable substances. Right? You understand my language? So since Jiva Goswami says this verse is clear, then I won't ask for any questions and I'll go on to the next verse. Text 52. Yachakshuresha sabita sakala grahanam rajas samastasura murtir shesha teja yasya gaya brahmati sambritakala chakro govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami yachakshuresha sabita sakala grahanam. Of all the planets, the sun is the Raja Samastasura Murtir. He's the Raj. The sun is the Raj of all the planets. The sun is the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence, the image of the good soul. In other words, that's the translation, but he's the Samasta, he's a Raja Sura Samasta. Murti means he's the form of the best of the demigods who are basically in sattva-gun. But as we know, no one's perfectly in any of the modes except the liberated soul who's in vishuddha-sattva. The sun, who is the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence, the image of the good soul, is as the eye of this world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey mounting the wheel of time. Purport. So obviously this verse is about Sri Suryadev. Certain professors of the Vedic religion worship the sun as Brahman. Professors. That means doesn't mean that they have a PhD in Indology. It actually means that they're professing. In other words, followers. Many followers of Vedic religion, they worship the sun as Brahman. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's language is quite erudite and quite high. The sun is one of the hierarchy of the five gods. In other words, he's one of the Panchapasanam, five principal Panchadevata, one of the five. Some people target in heat the source of this world, and therefore they designate the sun, the only location of heat, as the root cause of this world. In other words, some people believe, or they profess, that heat is the cause of this world. And since heat comes from the sun, they say the sun is the cause of the world. Many civilizations like that, there were sun worshippers. Japan, on their flag of Japan, the Japanese flag has a sun on it. It's a setting sun, red. Red sun. So it says that, rising sun or something? It must be rising sun. That's, setting is inauspicious. So it's a red sun in the morning, Udila Aruna. Aruna means red. Udila Aruna Purababhagi. So they were worshipping the sun, and also the Egyptians. They worshipped a god named Ra. Ra was the name of the sun god. So Arka is also the name of the sun god. Konark, Arka, Konark, many names. Purport goes on. Notwithstanding all that may be said to the contrary, the sun is, after all, or Surya, is only the presiding deity of a sphere of the sum total of all mundane heat, and is hence a god exercising delegated authority. The sun performs his specific function of service, certainly by the command of Govinda. So here in the purport, it mentions that the sun god, or Surya Dev, is one of the hierarchy of the five gods. So this was mentioned yesterday, the five gods are Panchadevata. And generally, materialistic people, impersonalists, meditators and yogis, and materialistic people that want good health, they worship these five gods, Surya and Ganesh and Shiva and Durga and Lakshmi and Vishnu together. That's five. You could say Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, and Surya. These are the Panchadevata. And the process of doing homa to them and yajnas and prayers and tapasya and yatras all comes under the category of Pancha Upasanam. So he's one of those gods that are mentioned. But the worship, this is not considered to be Vaishnavism. Because in Vaishnavism, people accept that Lord Vishnu or Krishna is the supreme Lord and the supreme God, and he alone is sufficient to be worshipped. One need not worship any other god. Materialistic people that desire good health, they will worship sun god, Surya. Every morning at sunrise, they'll offer red chandan with, made from red sandalwood tree, red chandan, or chandan mixed with keshar so it becomes red in color, and red flowers and red fruits like pomegranate, very red like Afghan pomegranates, very red ones, and like this, all different red objects, and also with water and so many prayers. Om Sriyaya Nama, Om Sriyaya Nama, Om Sriyaya Nama. So they will do like that for good health. But we don't have to worry about any of that, because Krishna explains that those who worship him with ananya bhakti and fixed devotion, then he preserves what they have and carries what they lack. So if you're lacking good health, by worshipping Krishna you'll get good health. Sometimes you may get a cold, but most of the time, by worshipping Krishna and following the prescribed rules of devotion, one will lead a pure life, eat pure foods, and live a regulated life of sattvic yogic principles, which will indirectly guarantee one has a fairly good level of health. But ultimately, the devotee, he surrenders to the Lord and depends on the Lord as his singular maintainer and protector. And he has no second maintainer or protector. This is a symptom of Sharanagati. There are six symptoms of Sharanagati. Vishnu Sharanagati or Krishna Sharanagati means that I don't need anybody else. I don't need any demigod. All I need is Krishna. He is my maintainer and my provider. And in my own humble way, I depend on him. And even if I'm capable or qualified with some abilities on my own, I feel myself powerless and incapable of doing anything without his divine sanction and blessing. So the devotee is a surrendered soul to the Lord, and he need not worship the Panchupasanam. He can abandon his Shiva puja and his all the different pujas and spend all of his time day and night worshipping Krishna. Shiva Goswami's purport in this verse we can read. Many sages say that the sun god is in truth the supreme Lord. So it's interesting that the great acharyas like Jiva Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Pad, Sanatana Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Santa Saraswati, and Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, when they write purports on Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, not only do they describe the word for word meanings or the context of where the verse was spoken and something about the geographical location of the setting of that verse and the biographies of the personalities and their rasas and personal exchanges on the platform of love. But oftentimes, they'll write what was on the mind. They'll reveal the mind of the speaker What was the speaker thinking of when he asked this question? And why did Arjuna ask this question? So in the purport of Gita, Prabhupada will write, Arjuna asked these questions not because he was an illusion, or not to, you know, for his benefit, but he asked these questions for the benefit of people in the future, because he knew that Krishna's words would always be fresh and interesting and applicable. And that this perennial philosophy of Gita, spoken by his Lord Bhagavan, would be helpful for all humanity in all times and places. So therefore, out of compassion for all souls, present and future, he acted that role of the bewildered, conditioned soul. So in that way, Jiva Goswami reveals why Brahma spoke this verse, number 52. Why does he speak about the sun god? So he speaks about the sun god, according to Jiva. It's spoken to reply to the false claim that sages say that the sun god is the truth, or in truth, the Supreme Lord. So he says, no, listen everyone, I'm Brahma. I'm the Supreme Creator. I'm the Adikavi. All the Smritis and Shrutis proclaim me to be the most intelligent person in the universe, as the Prajapati of all creation, and as the author of so many Shastras, Brahma Purana, and so many other things. So all those same Rishis and Sages, they certainly recognize and accept Brahma's supremacy in terms of the infinitude of his intelligence and intellectual capacity. But at the same time, some of them will still admit that the Supreme Lord, or the source of the world, is light, and the light is source of light is the sun, so therefore Suryadeva is the Supreme Lord in truth. So Brahma speaks this verse to silence all of those philosophers by saying, listen, you know, it's not that way. This Suryadeva, he's following the order. He has a boss. He's working for Govinda. On the order of Govinda, he mounts the wheel of time. In other words, he forces people to see the rising and setting of the sun. The sun moves by the order of Govinda, and time moves with the rising and setting of the sun. With every rising and setting of the sun, another day is lost, and we're another day closer to death. So the movements of the sun represent the movements of time. So the movements of time, like the movements of the sun, are all controlled by Govinda. So that is being proclaimed here quite emphatically from the four mouths of Brahma. As this particular Brahma has four heads. So in the verse, there are some words which Jiva Goswami chooses to comment on. Yak chakshur. So chakshur means the eye. So we're in ignorance, so we get enlightened. We get the eye of enlightenment by the mercy of Guru and Shastra. So he explains this word chakshu. He says, not only means I, but it means he who manifests. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna declares, in the 15th chapter, 12th verse, he says, that I am the splendor of the sun and the moon and the fire. All come from me. All originate from me. So Jiva Goswami is giving further praman, Shastra Praman, to strengthen the position of this verse and the conclusion and evidence of this verse by Brahma. So he's saying, yes, in Gita, Krishna also says, Govinda is also proclaiming that the splendor and the light of the sun comes from him. It's not like the foolish philosophers say, oh, all the light of this world comes from the sun, so the sun must be the supreme truth. But then Brahma is saying, no, The sun is simply, he gets his light from Govinda. And Govinda himself says same thing in the Gita. And then further, in the Shrutis, in the Shruti Shastras, Shruti means the four original Vedas, the Atharva Veda, Samaveda, Rig Veda, and Yajur Veda. In the Shruti Shastras, it's explained, out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows and the sun rises. Alright? So the wind is blowing out of fear. It's not that the sun is an independent entity. He's afraid that if he doesn't behave himself, then Krishna may swallow him. Like a ripe mango. And Treta Yuga, one of Krishna's devotees, an insignificant monkey, a tiny insignificant monkey named Hanuman. He was a little boy and he saw the shining sun in the afternoon sky, orange and soft and glistening. He thought it was a ripe mango. So just to test his jumping skills, he jumped up and he grabbed the sun and he swallowed it. It became very dark. There was no sun. And everyone was crying. Where's the sun? Where's the sun? Especially the sun planet was crying also. He was in the belly of Hanuman. So then they convinced that Hanuman, he should give back the sun. So if the devotee, insignificant devotee of Krishna, can swallow the sun, what about the Lord? So out of fear of the Lord, the wind blows and the sun rises and sets. He wouldn't dare not rise one day. Although sometimes people that have heartbreaks and heartaches, they say, oh, for me the sun didn't rise today. Or sometimes when one is separated from their beloved, they say, oh, when my lover left me, the sun set and it never rose again. They have songs like that. To be some indication of the sadness of life. That when my husband died or my wife died, the sun set on my life and it never rose again. That's only some metaphor, but it's not reality. The sun is always doing his work. So it says he's the eye of this world. As the eye of this world is mentioned there. That's another meaning of chakshu. So the sun, because he's the eye of the Lord, the sun is considered the eye of the Lord's virata rupa, or universal form. So what's the other eye? Right, the moon. The sun and the moon are the two eyes of the Lord. What are the two eyes of the devotees? No, that's the heart. Sorry. Clever, but wrong. He said Radha and Krishna are the two eyes of the devotee. I said that's the heart of the devotee, Radha and Krishna. Well, they're the two eyes of the devotee. Right on. Shastra Chakshush. We say Om Anjana. We glorify Guru every day. Om Anjana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Guru Chakshu, Guru and Shastra, these are the two eyes and the heart. So if you always have Shastra in your eyes and Guru in your eyes, then you'll always have Radha and Krishna in your heart. Well, there's only one eye on Guru and one eye on Maya, then we don't know what you have in your heart. Some mix-up, some Kitri program. So, sometimes when one is trying to understand this position of the sun god, it gets a little confusing. Because sometimes we hear names like Vivishwan is the lord of the sun in the Bhagavad Gita. He's the sun god. Sometimes we hear names like Suryadev, and we hear the names like Suri Narayan. And then it gets even more complicated, like Mitra. Mitra is another name of the sun. Because every month the sun has a different name. The sun has 12. The person who's in the post of the sun, he has 12 different names. Just like some person is in the position of prime minister. But every month of the year, as long as he's in office, he's called prime minister. Prime minister so-and-so, prime minister so-and-so. But the sun planet, the jiva who's in charge of the sun, has a different name every month. Sometimes he's known as Mitra. Sometimes it's Vivishvan, sometimes it's Surya. So it becomes a little confusing sometimes when one reads Shastras. And then sometimes he's called Suri Narayan. So it's a little difficult, but the basic understanding is this, that in the material world, all the planets are ruled by different devatas. Indra, Chandra, etc. And So all these different planets like Indraloka and Chandraloka and hundreds of millions of 33 core planets, they're all different jivas, jiva tattvas. So those kings and predominating rulers or deities are all jivas. But the Lord of the Sun is considered to be an expansion of Narayan. But he's considered to be an expansion of Aniruddha. Aniruddha is one of the Chaturvyuha. So he expands. Because Aniruddha is the Lord of the mind. So when Lord Shiva sees a sun planet, he's reminded that Suryadev, or what we call Surya Narayan, is an expansion of Aniruddha. So sometimes it's explained that Aniruddha expands himself as Surya Narayan, and in that form of Surya Narayan, he resides on the sun planet as the predominating deity of the sun planet. And then he's worshipped there by the prime minister of the sun planet, who is Vivishvan or whomever. So this is very common. Just like you see in Bali Maharaj's planet, Vishnu became his, became his doorman or something. Yeah, Vamanadeva. So Bali's there and he's doing puja to Vamanadeva. So who's the lord of Bali Loka, or of his planet? Well, Bali's the lord, but also the lord himself is there in one form. So unlike other planets, Chandraloka, Indraloka, etc., on a sun planet there's a form of Aniruddha expanded as an expansion of Aniruddha, who is Vishnu Tattva, known as Surya Narayan. But sometimes Suryadev, the demigod, who's a jiva, is called Surya Narayan. So it becomes a little confusing. But you should understand that there's two personalities. So when Lord Shiva sees the sun in the morning, he offers a prayer. Namo 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 Aniruddhaya Rishikesha Mriyatmane Namah Paramahamsaya Purnaya Nirvitatmane. So he's saying here, Namo namo Aniruddhaya Rishikesha Mriyatmane Namah Paramahamsaya Purnaya Nirvitatmane. So this verse is in Bhagavatam in the fifth canto. It's Lord Shiva's prayer to Surya. Where he's saying that you are the, like we says here in this verse of Brahma Samhita 52, you are the image of the good soul. In other words, Paramahamsaya. That the sun is very purifying. Wherever the sun shines, it sterilizes. Like people go out and they pass stool in the stool field. So much urine falls on the earth and so much stool. But when the sun shines in that stool field, it evaporates the urine and purifies the stool and dries it out and purifies and sterilizes that area. Sun is purifying. The wind is purifying. Water is purifying. But the sun is especially purifying. So the mind also becomes purified by the sun. And that the reason for that is that Aniruddha is the Chaturvyuha or Vishnu Tattva. The Vishnu Tattva Aniruddha Dev, or personality of Godhead known as Aniruddha, he is the Lord of the mind. He's in control of the mind. So people, they have trouble. They go to this astrologer and he's quick to take money. Because the more money he can get from you, the happier he is, no? So he says, oh, you know, I see here you have a problem with Chandra. Your mind is weak, you know, you're having some problem. Yeah, that's right, you know, my mind's weak, you know. So I'm disturbed in my mind. I think you need you should wear a pearl ring. You should wear a nice pearl ring, a moti ratna. And, that sounds good. Well, where can I get one? I just happen to have a whole box of them right here. And very first class one. And I won't, no cheating here. I'll give you cost price, you know, times 3,000. So then he very quickly sells you best quality, cheapest and best pearl to wear on your ring finger to counteract your difficulties with the mind. By appeasing the Chandradev. Little does he know that Aniruddha is inside the Maha Mantra. And Aniruddha is the Lord of the mind. And so why do we have to do all that? This is the Chintamani gem. We have 108 gems here. 108 Chintamani gems. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. So we don't need any Moti Ratna or Praval Ratna. Coral or pearl or Hira Ratna, diamonds or sapphire or Nila Ratna or any other kind of jewels. But as they say, A fool and his money are soon parted.
Or the cheaters and the cheated.
So if one has a cheating propensity himself, he is a very good candidate for being cheated. Because it takes a cheater to cheat another cheater. But one who is fixed in knowledge and beyond the cheating propensity, he can smell a cheater a mile away. He can see through the illusion and discern the reality. He can always find the milk and separate the milk from the water, as Prabhupada said today in his Bhagavatam lecture on the tape or on the class. I heard on the radio. On Ekadasi, they have a tape class or lecture on TV or whatever it is. So Prabhupada said, the Paramahamsa has the ability, if you feed that swan, the Hamsa, if you feed the swan some water, you feed the half a liter of milk. Now you have 1 liter of mixture of water and milk. And you put it that bowl in front of a Hamsa, then a Hamsa will go sip, 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 sip. And then after some time, there'll be 1/2 liter left. What will it be? It will be 1/2 liter of water. All the milk will be gone. Because the Hamsa has this kind of achintya shakti, as to all living entities have some inconceivable power. He has the power to separate milk from water. So this is the Paramahamsa. The Paramahamsa Vaishnava, or devotee, he has the ability to extract the truth. He has the ability to extract the truth from the world of illusion and extract the truth from a heart covered by illusion. So therefore, the Paramahamsa, the Mahabhagavat Paramahamsa, he is specifically empowered to continually exist on the platform of absolute reality because of his pure consciousness. And if he so chooses, he can also extract the milk-like purity of absolute knowledge and truth from the darkened cave of the heart of the conditioned soul. Some authorities say that the sun god is a jiva, and others say he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 23rd chapter, verse 3, Srila Prabhupada says, of all the different demigods, only the predominating deity of the sun, Surya Narayan, is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. End of quote. It's generally understood that Surya Dev is an individual living entity, especially empowered by the Supreme Lord as an Avesh incarnation. It means Shakti Avesh. The eye of the Lord. Unless the Lord sees, no one can see. He's the chief of all the demigods. In the Vedic conception, there is only considered to be one sun planet in every universe. So what are the duties of Surya Narayan? He provides heat and light. Maybe a little too much right now. If you could please turn it down a little bit, it would be highly appreciated. He hears and speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Does anyone disagree with that? These are duties of the sun god. He hears the Bhagavad Gita and speaks the Bhagavad Gita. Look at chapter 4 and you'll find out. In the Bhagavad Gita. Imam Vivashvate Yogam. Imam Vivashvate Yogam. That's the first verse of chapter 4, I believe. Vivashvate means Vivishvan. In the beginning, I spoke this knowledge to the sun god, and he spoke it to whom? Ikshvaku, his son, the son of the sun. He's a son of the sun. The third duty of the sun is he provides rain. And we certainly hope he'll do his duties in Braj, because we need lots of rain to grow Krishna's trees. The fourth duty is that he helps the jiva's mind becoming fixed by sterilizing it. When there is sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. Therefore, the sun god helps the mind of the living entity to become situated on the platform of Paramahamsa.
This is from the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, 24th chapter, verse 36, purport of Srila Prabhupada. So there's an intimate relationship between the sun and the purity of the mind. You see, when the sun is not there, many impure things happen. When is that? At night. When there's some reflected sun, then there's less impure things. But on the night of Amavasya, when there's no reflected sun and there's no sunshine, and dark moon, then many, many bad things happen. The many, many bad thoughts come into mind, and many bad activities are produced from those bad thoughts. The highest crime rate in any city in the world is reported on Amavasya. The most murders, the most thefts, the most rapes, the most, you know, love murders and robberies, everything on Amavasya. Jai Ho. So, the sun, because the sun himself, he's an expansion of Aniruddha. And the more the sun is visible and the more the sun is shining, it's a way to purify the mind. In yoga, and the yoga shastras, they say that it's very good, they meditate on the sun. They try to meditate on the sun. In the third eye, they meditate on the sun for a long time. And then after their mind, after they experience the purification of their mind by meditating on the sun, then they meditate on the lotus, on the Sahasrapadma. Sahasrapadma, the lotus of consciousness. So, we mostly just chant Hare Krishna. And then we also see a lotus flower in our mind. But it's not, it has 1,000 petals. But also Radhasham Sundar standing on that lotus flower. And they're very effulgent also, more effulgent than 10,000 suns. So automatically by realizing the presence of Radha and Krishna on the lotus of our heart, we will accomplish meditating on the brilliant sun and meditating on the lotus all in one. We don't have to have a side program of yoga meditation. So Aniruddha, he blesses the devotees. So in the morning it says it's very good for the eyes and for the mind to meditate, to stare at the sun planet for about 5 minutes without blinking the eyes. Pretty hard, impossible to do, but it's a yoga practice. Stare at the rising sun. Just after it comes over the horizon. So that's difficult to do if you live in an environment where there's lots of buildings or mountains. Because if you're in the valley and there's lots of mountains, by the time you see the sun, it's too late. You shouldn't look at the sun directly. But if you live on the ocean, it's quite easy because the sun rises from the ocean. And then it's very, very, it's very, very good for the eyes. It strengthens the eyes and has a tremendous purifying effect on the mind. If anyone has ever had the opportunity to practice that small sadhana of yoga. But it's very important to perform this activity at the right time, otherwise you go blind. Otherwise it's very harmful for the eyes, for the retina. It damages the retina. And all these types of sadhana, one requires a guru. Without guru, you do everything wrong because you speculate. And you're confident that your speculation is correct because your ego is your greatest ally. So with your speculation, your ally, it's the invincible force. Invincible force. You have your ego and your speculative powers. Together, you will conquer the world. You think you will. But you'll be trying to conquer the world life after life after life. Because with speculative powers and false ego, it's impossible to conquer the world. But Maya Maya arranges you to think that, yes, I'm winning. Yes, I'm right. Yes, I'm progressing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So Lord Shiva offers that prayer which you mentioned to keep his mind perfectly clean and engaged in devotional service of the Lord. Prabhupada also says in this purport, 4.24.36, the sun god sterilizes dirty things within the mind, thus helping one come to the platform of spiritual realization. So a fifth duty of the sun god is that he's an expansion of Aniruddha, or a Vishnu Tattva. Because Aniruddha doesn't directly contact the material mode of goodness, but through his empowered expansion, Suri Narayan, he purifies the mind of the living entity and frees and fills them with goodness. So that's why it's explained when the sun rises in the morning, one can offer pranams to the sun. Prabhupada explains in the fifth canto, one can offer pranams to the sun by chanting the Brahma Gayatri, Om Bhur Bhuvakswa Tatsaviturva Nyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo Yono Prachodayat. So that's it. The Brahma Gayatri that can be offered to the sun god. Or this prayer of Lord Shiva, Namo Namo Aniruddhaya. The sixth duty of the sun god is that the sun god is one of the 13 witnesses. In the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, it mentions that there's 13 witnesses to all of our activities. We think that we can escape the eye of the law. We can escape the man, as they say. They call the man. The law is called the man. The man is after us. The law. So we think, oh, it's very, very dark. It's a very dark night. It's a very lonely place. A very secret path. And this little girl is walking by herself, coming home from her grandmother's house. I will just snatch her. No one will know. No one will see. But he forgot. The moon is there. The night is there. The earth is there. There's 13 witnesses. So there's no hiding place. There's no secret. Oh, I know. Come, I have a secret place. No one will find us here. But Bhagavatam is reminding us of the 13 witnesses. The 13 witnesses are the sun and the moon and the stars and the day and the night and the sky and the earth and the water and the three sundiums. That means the juncture of night and day and day and morning and noon and afternoon and night. It's called Trisandhyam. The Devatas, the Super Soul, Yamaraj, and the 10 directions. So these are the 13 witnesses. Interesting number, huh? Lucky 13. So don't try to fool you'll be crushed by the number 13. All the actions of the sun are under control and direction of Lord Vishnu. The worshippers of the sun are mostly impersonalist and materialistic persons who are full of passion and have desires for materialistic boons like good health, etc. We can offer prayers to the sun god like the Brahma Gayatri and others. And we pray to the sun god not for health. We also, in the Vedic society, or especially in the reflected form of Vedic society, which is quite perverted and reflected, it's the burnt remnants of the Vedic society known as the modern day Hindu Bindu Khitri culture. Occasionally, one in a million of those strict followers of the Khitri culture, in the morning, at sunrise, will go out and offer Anjali. He'll offer pranams to the sun. If he's over 50 years old. If he's under 50, he never heard about it. He's under 50 years old, which is about 900 million people here in India. He'll never heard about it, or never did it, because he's very advanced. He's college educated. He's college graduate. He knows everything. But he actually knows nothing. Some plastic buttons and some cathode ray screen, that's all he knows. But beyond that screen, he knows nothing of reality. Culture, history, psychology, transcendence. Anyway, this is modern man. Computer technology. CT. ET. CT. So they will offer pranams, offering out of respect for the sun, because the sun is a form of God. It's representing the eye of the Lord. And he also is very kind, because he purifies the mind and sterilizes the mind of dirty things. So we're grateful and appreciative for his appearance every day in our lives. So we show our appreciation and gratitude by offering pranams or some offering of water or flour. That's the standard practice of the pious and humble religious Hindu. And it can be based on ritualistic following of his ancestors' footsteps, or properly it should be based on Shastric understanding of the identity and position of Suryadev as actually an expansion of Vishnu Tattva Aniruddha. And so when he's offering obeisances and respects to the sun, he's actually offering respects to Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Because that's what it means to be a devotee, is that you offer respects to the Lord. Manmana bhavamad bhakto mam namaskaru. He says that you should think of me, and if you're my devotee, then you offer respects to me and obeisances. So that is done. But for devotees, especially Vaishnav, Gaudiya Vaishnav devotees, they may also show their respects this way. Prabhupada says in many places we should never disrespect the demigods. What to speak of Vishnu Tattva or Suri Narayan or Aniruddha's expansion like the sun. We should never disrespect any of them. And Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya says, if anyone disrespects the demigods, they will never attain Krishna Prema. He has many shlokas there, how one should offer proper respect. It doesn't mean you continue to worship them and continue to do your vratas on Monday for Lord Shiva and all these things. That's due to fear and attachment to demigod worship. That's not what it means. It means that we offer respect to them and honor to them, but all of our puja, all of our worship, all of our prayers, all of our thoughts, minds, and words and deeds are for the service of Radha and Krishna. So one has to understand how to synthesize this and what the meaning of these things are. But for devotees, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who are on the platform of Ragmarg, who have some actual attachment, loving attachment to Radha and Krishna, they will see everything in their environment as a stimuli or as an inspiration to remember the Lord and his sweet pastimes. So when they see the sun rising every morning, they are reminded, first of all, of the brilliance of Radharani's complexion. Oh, Radharani, it's so beautiful. Oh, Mahaprabhu. Udila arana purava bhagi. Dvijamani ghora amani jagi. Ghora amani jagi. That jewel of the twice-born brahmanas, Ghora, Goramani, Gorasundar, that beautiful golden Lord Goranga, he rises every morning at Pratak, between 6 and 8 o'clock in the morning at Pratak Kal, and he gathers all his beloved Antaranga Bhaktas, and he goes out to the streets of Navadvip with coal and kartal, and he proclaims the new day with the rising of the sun. The kirtan rises through the air and wakes up all the Navadvip Bhaktas to the sound of the Madhura Naam, Madhura Naam, Madhura Naam. Gai Gora Madhur Sware, Gai Gora Madhur Sware. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the devotees see the rising sun and they remember Gauranga and Navadvip and the beautiful Nitya Leela of the Lord dancing down the streets of Navadvip. And as they remember Lord Gauranga and his beautiful pastimes, then the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, they snatch away the devotee's heart and they whisk the devotee's heart into Brajadham. And then as the devotee continues to offer his respects to the rising sun, then all of a sudden he remembers the sweet pastimes of Radha and Krishna and at the end of Madhyan Leela from 10:48 to 3:36 in the afternoon. At the end of this Leela, Radha and Krishna, they go to Suryakund. Suryakund is near, behind the village of Ral. When you go on Chatikar Road out to Govardhan and Radhakund, you go through the village of Ral, and you turn right and go out some kilometers, and you come to Suryakund. And there's a beautiful ancient deity of Suryadev there, the sun god, Suryanarayan. We went there? Very beautiful deity. And that deity is very famous all over Braj. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Hanuman deities and Shani Murtis and Krishna Murtis and Ram Murtis and so many deities. But a handful, 10 or 20 or 30, are very famous for bestowing boons and benedictions upon their worshippers. And Suryadev is one of those, and Suryakund, he's one of those great, powerful deities that will fulfill the desires of the worshippers. And he has a great history for that. So many of the Brijvasis will go there for receiving various boons. So the wonderful pastimes of Radha and Krishna at Suryakund are recounted in Krishna Bhavanamrita and Govinda Leelamrita. So there's some summary here in this Radhakund book because it's not far from Radhakund. So when the devotee sees the sun, he offers respect and he thinks of the wonderful, funny pastime of Krishna disguising himself as a brahmana and going to Suryakund, and such a sweet pastime of Radha and Krishna. So seeing the sun for the devotee is udipana, or udipan. It is a transcendental stimulus for remembering his relationship with Radha and Krishna. First of all, he can remember Gauranga and his Leela, and Radha and Krishna and their Leela, and if he's more advanced in his own realization and revelation, he will also remember the services to be rendered in those particular Leela Stalis at those particular times of the Lord's sweet pastimes. Taking Jatila's permission, Radha and the gopis leave Yavat every day at about 10:30 in the morning and go to Suryakund for worshipping the sun god. Radha uses Surya Puja as an excuse to get out of her mother-in-law's house and meet secretly with her beloved Priyatam at Radhakund. During the entire five-hour period of Madhyan Kal, from 10:48 to 3:36, Radha Govinda enjoy a variety of blissfully intimate pastimes at Radhakund. Radha's long absence from Yavat fills Jatila with suspicion, and Jatila wonders, why is Radha so late in returning? She must be with that gallant lover. In other words, she goes out at 10:30, says, I'm just going to Suryakund, I'll worship Suryadeva and be right back. So that should take a half hour to walk there, half hour for puja, half hour to walk back. So she should be back by 10:30, 11, by 12 o'clock she should be back. But 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30, 2:30, going 3:30, hey. So naturally a mother-in-law having Vatsalya Bhav like a mother, she'll worry because she worries about the protection of her daughter. Parents are concerned with protection, nourishment, maintenance, and all satisfaction, growth, learning, so many things they have on their mind. So she's worried about protecting her daughter, like most mothers, and she's especially concerned that her daughter is protected from that black snake known as Krishna. So she becomes very, very suspicious. Why is my daughter-in-law so late Vrindadevi's parrot, Shukshmadi, flies excitedly into Sudevi's kunja and shrieks, Jatila's coming! Shaking in fear, Radha Madhav and the gopis run quickly north towards Suryakund. Leaving Krishna behind, Kundalata, a trusted friend of Jatila, who acts as Radha's guardian, Kundalata brings Radha to Surya's temple just moments before the old Jatila arrives. Jatila said, Oh, Kundalata, why are you so late? Kundalata replied, Oh, we couldn't find any Brahmin boys. But there's one boy from Mathura named Vishwa Sharma. Vishwa means universe, and Sharma is a name for Brahmin Gotra. So it's kind of a play on words. Like, if I say, what is your name? Or if I say, what's your name? You say, Durmukh. Durmukh. You see in Mahabharata, someone has the name Durmukh. Durmukh. Mukha means face, and Dur means bad. So like if you have pock marks all over your face and chicken pox, and I say, what's your name? And you say, Durmukh. And you say, oh, that's about right. You have a pretty bad-looking face. Or if you come to somebody who has a perfectly shaped face and beautiful skin as soft as, you know, a new leaf of a tamal tree and glistening like the moon, very beautiful, then that's a very beautiful face. So the name for that is Sumukhi. Sumukhi. Sumukhi means beautiful, beautiful face. So Radharani's another name is Sumukhi. Krishna being called Vishwa Sharma means he's the universal Brahman. So Kundalata said, we couldn't find any Brahmins anywhere, but somehow we found this Brahmin from Mathura. He's named Vishwa Sharma, which is like a play, it's like a joke. It means he's the universal Brahman. He's the Brahman of the whole universe. He is a disciple of Garga Muni, and he's very expert in Surya Puja. After this boy met Krishna and Kamyavan, Madhu Mangal brought him to Arishtakund for bathing. Arishtakund means Shrikund or Radhakund. At that time, we saw him there, and we humbly begged him to perform Surya Puja for us, and he agreed. But when he heard your name, Madhu Mangal forbade him because of your harsh behavior and your baseless criticism of the gopi's character. So Kundalata explained to Jatila that why they were late and why the Brahmana wasn't there yet. We met a nice Brahmin. He agreed to come here. But when we mentioned your name, that, you know, the daughter-in-law of Jatila, when your name was mentioned, Madhu Mangal heard it, then he said, oh no, Vishwa Sharma, don't go. That lady, she's a nasty. That lady, Jatila, she's nasty. With an affectionate tone, Jatila urged Kundalata, oh chaste one, you're expert in all affairs. Please go quickly and bring that Mathura Brahmana boy by carefully soliciting him. Feigning sadness, Kundalata sighed. Oh, Arye, I tried my best, but that peaceful Brahmin boy became afraid after hearing about your rough behavior. Jatila said, okay, listen. Just do one thing. Take Dhanishta with you and try to persuade him. If he refuses to come along, then invite Madhu Mangal. While mentioning to Madhu Mangal that I will offer lots and large lots of sweets and a large dakshin. See how clever Jatila is? In other words, Kundalata is saying, I don't think this Brahmin's going to come. So Jatila is thinking, okay. Oh, because of Madhu Mangal. So now we have to win Madhu Mangal's favor. So the best way to win the favor of Madhu Mangal is to give him a, you know, tiffin full of para, or a tiffin full of sandesh. So if you give him a tiffin full of sandesh, lots and lots of sweets, and a dakshin, he'll be really happy. So it's called a bribe. This is one of the four means of diplomacy. Samaveda danda, was it? Samaveda danda? Anyway, sama means equalize, you pacify. And then beta means you divide. And dhamma means you bribe him. And danda means you hit him on the head. So this is called bribing. Dan, you know, dan means, or give him some bribe. So this is called diplomacy. So Jatila is an expert. Most mother-in-laws are pretty good at diplomacy. If you ever married, you'll come to understand how mother-in-laws are very good at diplomatic dealings. In other words, diplomatic dealings is a polite way of saying cheating. And clever dealings, and we say diplomatic, it means, you know, cheating and like that. Clever, cunning dealings. Jatila, Kundalata, and Dhanishta were astonished when they saw Krishna disguised as a Brahmin. In other words, they didn't know. Completely peaceful and equipoised, Krishna appeared as the ideal Brahmin depicted in the Vedas. Jatila was fooled, and even the gopis were struck with wonder upon seeing the, quote, Brahmana. After being duly honored by Jatila, Vishwasharma offered a blessing in return. May your son become rich with many cows, and may your daughter be embraced by good fortune. May your daughter be embraced by good fortune. Who is the personification of all good fortune? Krishna. Because Krishna, disguised as a Brahmin, is blessing. I bless your daughter that she may be, what? Embraced by good fortune. That's me, Baba. Beginning here and throughout this pastime, Krishna will utter mantras and make statements that have double meanings. In other words, he says something outwardly in Sanskrit. Like he says, oh, you're very intelligent. But he says the Sanskrit, he uses a particular word in Sanskrit for intelligent, which also means, that Sanskrit word he uses also means foolish. So it's actually, you're very foolish. It's called double talking. But so Krishna is more clever than Jatila. So she catches the outside meaning and not the inside meaning. So he's chanting these mantras because that's what they do for puja. The foolish Jatila can only understand the outer meaning, whereas Radha and the gopis fully realize and relish the inner meaning deep within their love-filled hearts. Vishnu Sharma has already done that by saying, may your daughter be blessed, be embraced by good fortune. So she's thinking, oh, money, wealth, opulence. But the word he used means me. So now, then Vishnu Sharma says, O Radha, if you embrace me, then you will attain all auspiciousness. This is the inner meaning of Krishna's previous statement by saying, your daughter Radha will be embraced by all good fortune. Pretending that it is part of the puja procedure, the Brahmana asked Jatila about her daughter's name. Upon hearing the name Radha, Krishna's body trembles with sattvic bhavs. Just like when the gopis are in their homes and they hear the Venuvad, they hear the sound of Krishna's flute. Vad means sound. The Venuvad, when they hear the sound of his flute, the sound of Krishna's flute is simply carrying the prema of Krishna's heart. So Krishna's prema, his intense anurag and love for them is being carried on the notes of his flute. And even he blends not only is prema mixed with the notes of his flute, but even that he blends the individual names of each gopi into the song that he plays on the flute. So when he plays his flute, he sends his prema and he packages his prema in the notes of his flute, and on the outside of that package with further notes of his flute, he inscribes the name. Just like when you have a package, you say, for Radhika. And then, so that is a little card on the outside of the gift package that has the name inscribed. So he blends the name and mixes it with his anurag, prema of his heart, and he sends it out through the holes, dancing out through the holes of his flute. On that flute song, that Venuvad dances through the air and enters the hearts of the gopis and starts dancing there. Then they start dancing and they become completely submerged by waves of sanchari bhavs, which flow, rise and fall in the ocean of their sthayi bhava or madhurya praying for Krishna, and just forces them to run out of their houses and abandon all their laja, their shyness, and their pati dharma, and their loka dharma, and all their other considerations of respect and religious principles. So what to speak of, that's the reaction of the action of Krishna's flute. Now what's it from the other side? So when Krishna hears the flute sound of Radharani, the flute sound of Radharani is simply her name. If someone speaks the name of Radha, that sound of Radha's name enters Krishna's ear and dances in his heart and causes the Sanchari waves, these waves to rise, these ecstatic waves, tidal waves of prema, of ecstasy to rise in the ocean of his Madhurya prema in his heart, and he becomes overwhelmed. And he starts shaking and trembling, his hair stand on end, and tears shoot out of his eyes like a pitchkari, and that's known as astasattvic bhavas. So when he said, because this is part of the puja, the purohit or the head priest asked the yajaman, I think it's called the yajaman, he asked the yajaman, the benefactor whom he is doing a puja for, what is the name of your daughter? And then Jatila says, Radha. And when he heard Radha, then he kind of lost his Brahminical shanti, shanti, shanti hi. Brahman is really shanti, shanti, shanti hi. It was supposed to be very peaceful. But he became completely vivala. Vivala means overwhelmed and agitated with perturbations and ecstatic trembling of love within his heart and mind. Just by hearing a small song, it was a small song. Krishna played many songs on his flute in Venu Gita. But this was a small song, Ra, Da. Two syllables. Very small song, but such big effect. He heard one small song and his body starts trembling with sattvic bhavs. To conceal these ecstatic motions, Krishna feigns surprise and says joyfully, this is that famous, most qualified girl whose chastity is well known even in Mathura? Because he's from Mathura, Vishwasharma. You are truly blessed to have such a daughter-in-law. Krishna informs Jatila that before starting the puja, one must first accept the priest by chanting a Vedic mantra. This is the mantra. I accept Vishwasharma, who is most pure and learned, and whose dynasty bestows fortune on the world, as my priest. So in other words, the yajaman has to recite that mantra. Yes, I accept. Just like when you go to Radhakund and Mohan does puja for you, so Radhakund puja, he says all these mantras, and in the mantras he talks about, he says, Aristakund and Vrindavan may, Aristakund may, Kartik Maina may. He's saying it's time, it's Kaladesha and Patra, so he'll recite it in the mantras. So many of the mantras will stay the same and some will change. It's always Aristakund may, Vrindavan may, Aristakund may, then it's the time. Kartik may, Chaitramas may, in Chaitramas, and Vaishakmas may. And then Radhakund Tata, then he says, what's your name? And then he says, what's your Gotra? Chuta Gotra, what's your name? And then you fill in your name. So-and-so, Krishnadas. And then he says in Hindi, I accept. And then you're saying it, I accept. And he fills in his name, Mohan as my Purohit. And then I will give him a don. If you're repeating the mantras, and I will give him don. And then he says how much. And so if you're listening to the mantras, then you say, hey, wait a minute, maybe I don't accept you. Since you're doing it, we'll see if I accept you. Then he says the next mantra, which is don. I say, wait a minute, I didn't say anything about. And then you don't say anything. So I'll give whatever I want. He starts laughing. So this is when I do that at Radhakund when you do puja. This is part of it. It's called the Varna, Brahman, the Purohit Varna, acceptance of the Purohit Varna. So I accept Krishna. So here's the inner meaning of that Sanskrit mantra which Vishwasharma requested Radharani to chant before commencing the Surya Puja. The inner meaning is, I accept Krishna, whose name or gotra purifies the world, who is most learned in the art of love, as mine. Interesting inner meaning. Next, the Brahmana instructs them in chanting pranams to Suryadeva. So now they have to chant a pranam, because the Ishtadev whom you're going to worship, you have to offer pranams first. First you accept the brahmana, then you offer respects to the Ishtadev, then respects to the brahmana, and then so many rituals are there. So now the mantra to offer respects. O Sridev, I offer my obeisances unto you. You destroy the darkness, make the lotuses bloom, and you are a well-wisher of the world. Inner meaning. I offer myself to Krishna, whose darshan removes the affliction of lusty desires. It's a fact. If you stand in front of Shama Sundar, the lust will go from your heart. He is the all-attractive friend of the lotus-like gopis. Throughout the puja, Madho Mangal is reciting various Vedic mantras. At the end, he advises Srimati Radhika, Hey Radhe, to complete the worship of the sun god, Gopati, and to increase your wealth of cows, you must offer some cows, Gotati, to the priest. Usually, after you've performed a jagya or puja, you have to remunerate or compensate or give charity, dan pratigraha, dan. You have to give Brahman dan, dakshin, to the brahmana in the form of silk or gold or cows. Nowadays, you give 101 rupees and a cotton chudder. But it's supposed to be quite elaborate. Hills, mountains of grain, or kilos of gold, or dozens of cows. This is proper remuneration for doing a jagya. So he says, now you should offer some cows to the priest. So a cow costs 8,000 rupees now. People don't, they offer 101 rupees. So the inner meaning, to fulfill Krishna's desires for romantic pastimes, you must offer your body with all its senses, Gotati, to the coward king, Gopati, or Krishna, because it's the same word. Gopati means the sun, and Gotati means cows. But Gotati also means the group of senses, and Gopati also means the father, or the king of the cows. This is all Sanskrit. Being very impressed with Vishwasharma's brahminical expertise, Jatila said, from this day on, I shall engage this peaceful, sham-colored Brahmin boy to perform my daughter's puja. Rivo! Vishwasharma said, having been trained by my guru, Gargamuni, I am now an expert palmist, astrologer, and clairvoyant. Clairvoyant means like someone who can see the future. On Jatila's request, Kundalata asked Vishwasharma to read Radha's palm. Hearing the request, Krishna pretends to be lost in contemplation. He goes like this. And then replies, as an ideal brahmachari, I do not touch women, nor do I look at any part of their bodies. I am sorry, but this is my vow. But since you are very eager and are depending on me, I will honor your desire. Let me see her hand from a distance. Glancing upon Srimati Radhika's soft, reddish palm, awakened Krishna's memory of his many intimate pastimes with her. Overwhelmed by blissful symptoms, Krishna began to cry, tremble in joy, and break out in bumps of joy. Trying to conceal his ecstasy, Krishna explained, aha, this is amazing. I can see from the auspicious marks on your daughter-in-law's hand that this, your daughter is the goddess of fortune herself. All opulence will be manifest wherever she casts her merciful glance. Wherever she lives will be filled with all auspiciousness. Now, what's the inner meaning of that Sanskrit statement of Vishwasharma? I will certainly become the most fortunate person in the world when I meet alone with this girl named Radha. Krishna asked Jatila the name of her son. Krishna means disguised as a Brahma. Then, after making a show of calculating his horoscope, Krishna said, because he said he's an expert clairvoyant, palmist, and astrologer, aside from being a yogic Brahmin, a Purohit. So when she told the name of her son, then he thought. Then Jatila says, well, she's looking very, you know, worried look. What is it? I see many dangerous and inauspicious planets influencing your son's life. It appears that he could die at any moment. But rest assured, all this is nullified by the power of this supremely chaste girl. So it's all nullified. It's all nullified means removed, destroyed, by the power of this chaste girl, his wife named Radha. Hearing this, Jatila became very happy, and she placed two gold rings before Vishwasharma as a reward. With his skillful word jugglery, Krishna, Vishwasharma, converted the angry, suspicious, and harsh-spoken Jatila into an affectionate mother-in-law.